Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won the first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington. On the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed a shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
It's a game day, a couple of days after the college football season comes to an end. Arkansas and Florida doing battle tonight at Bud Walton Arena. So got that to talk about. Of course, you'll hear it right here on ESPN Arkansas. 7:30 tip-off. 7 o'clock for the pregame show. Man, you get some really difficult start times during the conference season because of the 8 o'clock and 6 o'clock slot times that the SEC network puts you into. I saw where a game in the ACC yesterday, I think it was North Carolina State, North Carolina. I think that was slated for a 9 o'clock tip. You do get a couple of those at Bud Walton every once in a while. That's just unfair. That is just unfair to be asking people to show up for a tip-off at 9, middle of the week. 7:30 is a good one, though. Really good one. Hopefully get a decent atmosphere and crowd on hand. Probably be more people showing up because of a win over Texas A&M on Saturday than there would be with a loss, the way things go sometimes. Students aren't quite yet in session, so it's up to... it's up to the locals, so to speak. Of course, plenty of the students are locals, but it's up to the ones that actually live around Northwest Arkansas or wherever else. Plenty do come up from Central Arkansas or from the River Valley to make it a good atmosphere for Game 2 of the SEC schedule, in which the Razorbacks get what look like a little bit of a wounded, wounded tiger, but... A thrashing Gator that's not quite sure what to make of themselves after they choke on a big second-half lead against South Carolina and lose the game on a walk-off dunk, which is just something you don't hear about very often. I saw where South Carolina, by the way, picks off Mississippi State last night in overtime. And there was a dunk near the end of it. Mississippi State had possession with about 8 seconds to go, needing a three in order to tie it. Never even really got the ball past much further away from the half court line before the Gamecocks steal it and go in for an uncontested dunk. And Frank Martin's got his Gamecocks 2-0 in conference. Big surprise there, but Mississippi State's not the same team on the road that they've been at home this year. You see a lot of close games on the road, a lot of blowout wins at home, and I wouldn't expect a blowout tonight when Arkansas plays the Florida Gators. Ty Richardson, we look at the betting line today, and I heard you and Tommy and John on the Morning Rush talking about it, that Florida is a favorite on the road, even though they've got an 8-5 record, and head coach Mike White says he doesn't even know what to expect from most of his team when they show up. But yet Florida is favored by 1.5, which I guess says a little bit about how the betting public views Arkansas, how Vegas views Arkansas, that they might expect a little bit of a come down after a road win against admittedly not a good team in Texas A&M. But to see the Razorbacks a home dog to a team that isn't even ranked is a little bit of a surprise.
I think it's mainly due to the series history that's been recent between these two, because if you look at what Florida and Arkansas, when they faced off as of late, Arkansas has not fared well in these games. They've lost 8 of their last 10. Florida has only lost 1 out of the last 6 games. I mean, Mike White, when he came in after Billy Donovan, you were kind of curious to how he would settle in with Florida, and I think it's hard to replace a 2-time national champion head coach. But when it comes to facing off against Arkansas, hasn't been much of a problem for him. He's really had a lot of success against Mike Anderson, especially Kayvon Allen, a guy that's had multiple success stories against Mike Anderson game after game, a guy that many in this state was hoping would come to Arkansas, instead goes to Gainesville and becomes a Florida Gator, has really torched the Razorbacks last couple of times they played.
He's always come ready to play against Arkansas, specifically Bud Walton Arena. I had the call a couple of years ago when they opened up against Florida. That was a better Florida team. a lot better of a Florida team. I think they were ranked in the top 10 in that ball game. Keyvan, if I remember correctly, scored 25, close to 25.
On fire.
And was. Couldn't stop, and game was over 10 minutes in. That'll be a different story today. And that was a much different Florida team, much different Arkansas team. Heck, those teams are much different from what we saw last year when Arkansas knocked Florida out of the SEC tournament. So they did end what had been, I thought it was a five-game losing streak in the series to Florida, but they pick up the neutral site victory. But Arkansas is a home dog, plus 1.5 right now. That's one I would take. That's definitely one I would take. We'll have a prediction on the game later on today. But one thing for certain is that Arkansas will be a little bit shorter on the bench without freshman guard Jordan Williams, who announced he is transferring.
I put in Williams. It's Phillips.
Oh, pardon me, Jordan Phillips. I'm looking, and I know his name's Phillips. I'm looking right at the rundown that you put down here for me.
Common last name. That's all. That's 100% on me.
Well, yeah. I mean, there have been plenty of transfers in for freshmen in the last couple of years. I don't think any of them was named Williams, though. Darius Hall.
Ja'Cory Williams.
Ja'Cory Williams. That's one you're thinking
of. That's honestly what I was thinking of because I read about it in the transfer. So, yeah, Darius Hall, Ja'Cory Williams, Jimmy Witt, Nick Babb, C.J. Jones. Nick Babb's actually having a pretty good year at Iowa State, which is interesting. Ja'Cory Williams was, I think, at Middle Tennessee State. He was their conference's player of the year, Conference USA's player of the year, if I remember that correctly. He didn't have a great NCAA tournament appearances, but he was pretty good for Middle Tennessee State and Rick Kermit's squad when he was there, Kermit Davis's squad when he was down there. So, yeah, he hit and miss, but I mean, transfers happen all the time in college basketball. We saw Quad A Green transfer for Kentucky earlier this year, and that's something Mike Anderson's had to deal with since he's been in Arkansas.
And usually the program bounces back from the transfers nonetheless anyway. And Jordan Phillips began the season coming back from a knee injury. I know they'd had big plans for him. Even when he came back, Mike had said he thought he could provide some length at the guard position.
About 6'7".
Yeah, and the ability to drive, be a good rebounding guard, but only averaged about 5.5 minutes in the 7 games he was in. I know he'd helped them come back against Austin Peay, but it's going to be a different story once you get into the conference season. When you settle in on your guys now, they are your guys. It didn't look like Jordan Phillips was going to be one of the guys that you're looking to off the bench. That's different when you're talking about Gabe Osaboyan, Desi Sills, Keyshawn Embry-Simpson. Really, but you would look at, I mean, if there's anybody that you would replace Phillips with any of those two, he's probably battling against Embry-Simpson and Sills for playing time. The way Desi looked first half, certainly against A&M, that's not a kid you're going to take out of the rotation anytime soon.
Yeah, it was pretty fearless for the way he played as a freshman. And what Phillips provided is the length you mentioned as a guard, runs about 6'7"-ish, but he just, coming off that torn meniscus that he was having to deal with, which is what I think I'm dealing with. I haven't gotten an MRI on it yet, but
You took care of your car before you took care of your body.
I know. So I'm still waiting on the results on my ankle. I don't know what the deal. I was telling Tommy I'd break it down. He was like, yep, you're getting old, man. So
that's what happens when you actually leave college finally.
Exactly.
You get out of college, the body is essentially just starts breaking. You can't sleep in any longer, certainly not you.
Slowly but surely.
It's your morning show, getting up at 3 in the morning, going to sleep at 5 the previous night.
Yeah, slowly but surely. But yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see. I don't know if this is that impactful. I mean, it's always going to
probably not. You never really know what the impact is right after the transfer. Mm-hmm. Wherever Jordan goes, whatever he does after that, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what he would have added if he would have stayed at Arkansas.
Exactly.
It doesn't work out that way. For a team that has 7 freshmen on the roster anyway, you'd figure one of them probably is leaving the team, I don't know if you think about during the season,
but maybe after.
Close after the season.
And people are wondering now, does this give a chance for Justice Hill to possibly play in 2019, this latter part of the season? And to that I would say, I don't know if you want to burn a year when he could get a full, basically year and a half's worth of practice before he plays almost. I almost think you'd rather definitely want to sit out. I know Mike Anderson would definitely rather him sit out. You have a couple injuries or something, the injury bug hits you, then maybe you think about it. But at this point, I don't see why you'd play Justice Hill. I know that Justice Hill, from what I've heard, wants to play this season. I just don't think it's wise, and I think Mike Anderson, Coach Z, Scotty Thurman and the guys, they know that it wouldn't be prudent for them to play Justice Hill this year. Even though he wants to, it's not always about what the kid wants. It's about what's better for the basketball team and his future. And what's better for his future is letting him practice with the guys all of this season and then get him ready for 2020.
Well, you're not worried about the point guard play, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's the position Justice will play with the way Jalen Harris has played, and especially the last couple of games with 17 assists and only one turnover. And he's been so good handling the rock. That'll be interesting, though, over the next 2 years to pay attention to, because Jalen's just a sophomore. Boy, these two in the backcourt, maybe not at the same time, but the fact that you've got a point guard 1A and a point guard 1B, if everything you read about Justice in basketball is true.
Which Arkansas really hasn't even had a 1A, Phil, under Mike Anderson.
Well, you do now, and I think you got, from all we're reading about, and from what I know some people have seen, Kevin McPherson has told us this, heard the same from Richard Davenport, that Justice Hill is a guy that can star for 4 years at Arkansas, coming out really just as a freshman. But I would imagine that freshman season wouldn't start now. It would start in the fall of the 2019-2020 season. You know what? Back to the matchup with Florida. This isn't an up-and-down Gators team. This is a team that looks very more, much more methodical than ever before, and they rely on defense strictly to set the tone for the game. Now, Arkansas does the same thing under Mike Anderson. Defense supposed to turn into offensive opportunities as long as you're able to grab the rebound, which they did for the most part against Texas A&M, but it's more of a fast-paced defense to offense. Florida, I think, is different. The tempo of the game will determine who ends up with the victory. And I heard earlier today, I mean, if you just look statistically, the Florida Gator defense, very good. One of the best in the country, in fact. 10th best scoring defense in the country, allowing 60.7 points per game. Arkansas, of course, is averaging in the 80s, though it's been a few games since you got to 80 points. You're going back off that six-game winning streak, 121 against Florida National, 90 against Montana State, 98 against Colorado State. Arkansas is not an 80-point-a-game team this year.
Especially as of late. They have not been as consistent on offense as they were to start the season or kind of the middle of the season. But, yeah, the inconsistencies. We had Andrew Spivey on the Morning Rush, and he talked about how Kayvon Allen was supposed to be the go-to guy this year and kind of has been inconsistent. He's actually averaging a career low in points per game this year as a senior, which is kind of weird because most of the time you think that people are really going to step up as their senior. He's been inconsistent. You also look at Jalen Hudson, who was one of the premier players on last year's squad. He's been inconsistent.
I mean, he's about half his scoring average. Yeah. Under 7 points a game, he was about 15 last season.
Lethal shooter and just hasn't found a stroke this year. And they don't really, like, Keystone's, he's not bad. Kavarius Hayes, like, not bad, but it's not like this Florida team is loaded by any means. But I think going back to the Vegas odds, I think people are just that work in Vegas and that set these lines are just setting it based on the fact that Arkansas has struggled so mightily against the Gators last few games, whether it's on the road or at home. I know Arkansas got that victory pretty handily in the SEC tournament last year, but I'm just curious how this team reacts tonight because they got the first road win, as you mentioned, on the road against A&M. Now it's going to be a different test coming back home where you have more of an advantage, but I think you're playing a better basketball team tonight.
Well, you also got LSU and Tennessee coming up the next couple of ball games. LSU defended home court last night, defeating Alabama. Did the Alabama fans even realize that they'd lost their second game of the week? Or did they even care very much? Of course, we know what Tennessee's doing. They wiped out Georgia in Knoxville, then go into Columbia, Missouri, and wipe out Mizzou without their best players even doing anything for the first, I want to say, 10 or 15 minutes. Grant Williams hadn't scored.
Or Schofield.
Nor had Admiral Schofield scored in the first 10 to 12 minutes, yet they are blowing out a decent Missouri team at Mizzou Arena.
Because Mizzou, like DeJounte Porter, he's still not. He's out for the season, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. So they don't have him, but Mizzou's still not a bad basketball team. And like Konzo Martin, like he's kind of been up and down in Missouri, but it's not like their team has just been awful by any means. So you look at Tennessee, and I mentioned, I think Arkansas is going to go to Knoxville and just get waxed. Like I think it's going to be a rough game for Arkansas.
But that could be the same for almost every team in the SEC, the way things are going right now. You don't know what you're going to get out of Kentucky.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're going to get out of Mississippi State on the road. Really, what you're going to get out of Mississippi State on the road is not the same team as you get in Starkville. Auburn, maybe. Auburn's a different story. That might be the best game of the season. Auburn, Tennessee. I don't know where they play each other this year. Arkansas at Tennessee. That's not one of the five road games that I had pigeonholed as the winnable road games.
So they play at Auburn this season. No, I looked at that. I'm looking at Florida's schedule.
Well, you do. For Arkansas, the schedule does show LSU Saturday at the Bud. And then on Tuesday next week, a really tough road test.
Auburn does play. So I was right. Auburn does play Tennessee at home. But no, like Arkansas schedule, like go to Tennessee, go to Auburn, go to Kentucky.
Texas Tech,
in
the Big 12 SEC Challenge.
Who just beat Oklahoma last night. So, I mean, that's not going to be an easy, the stretch, because Texas Tech's in what, February?
That's the, no, January 26th.
It's January, okay, it's either February or the end of January. So, yeah, that, it's not easy, because I think most people are chalking that up as a loss, and I think most people are chalking up Auburn as a loss, Tennessee is a loss, Kentucky is a loss. Now, if you can snag one of those four, because any of those road wins will look great. I know we're kind of applying it differently with net ratings and everything, but I think if you can snag one of those road wins, that's going to help out a lot.
Even this one today, I mean, Florida in the net rankings, they're higher than Arkansas. Florida's net ranking 46. Arkansas is in the, I think, 73 when I checked it earlier tonight, this afternoon. So
A&M was like...
It'll help you.
A&M was... I want to say like 122 when they played. They're pretty high. The SEC's like RPI and stuff. We talked about with Aaron Torres and Blake Lovell. It's just the SEC as a conference hasn't helped themselves outside of really Tennessee beating Gonzaga early on in the season. They haven't helped themselves out much in non-conference play. Their RPI should be a lot better than what it is, but as a conference, the teams haven't progressed like many thought they would heading into the season.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Tie Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
Derek, if you were to grade yourself for the first podcast, what grade are you going to give yourself?
Well, first of all, Ty gets a lot of points because that is Marv Albert on NBC.
They had
the tournament back in the early 80s. And, yeah, they almost missed it because they were in the studio for some reason talking to Brian Gumbel. But, yeah. The grade, I'm my worst critic.
You're an honest guy. You're not going to hold anything back.
The thing is, we're literally turning the recorder on and just kind of seeing what happens here. And so when I did the segment, one of the things we're doing, and I'm going to do it again tonight after the Razorback game, is as soon as the game ends, I'm turning the mic on and just, you know, going through what we saw, what I think, all this stuff. And it was pretty easy to do 15 minutes right after that game on Monday night with Alabama and Clemson about all the different things going on both in the game and with the playoff and everything. So I think I think people will enjoy it. And so far, a lot of people have listened to it. So I appreciate that.
Well, I was one of them. I was entertained. And it's an interesting idea you're coming up with here to have instant reaction, which you can't do on live radio because, you know, you got the post game from IMG, you got the post game to the post game perhaps on some stations, you know, but to have that instant reaction immediately, and that, you know what, it was funny how you put it. You just turn the mic on and see what happens. And on instant reaction, I think you, after the championship game, when you were doing that first segment Monday, I think was just like everybody else. We didn't know what to think. You even said it.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think about this. So a couple days after, how do you digest seeing Alabama get their heads handed to them?
It's still amazing because they just the coaching staff at Alabama got worked. I mean, Clemson was just so much more prepared, and it very well could be all of the turnover on Alabama's coaching staff finally coming back to bite them in a big, big way. It was just, it was shocking because we've never seen a Saban team get just totally outworked like that. And I don't know if we've seen Alabama in 15 years just look that ill-prepared for a big football game. It was shocking. It really was.
So, Derek, kind of going on the other side of that, Trevor Lawrence, freshman quarterback, was unbelievable in that game. And I know he got some help from Justin Ross and a couple other of his stud wide receivers. But how impressed were you with his play as a true freshman in that moment?
It's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. I mean, he is a true freshman. And he threw for, 347 or something like that against Alabama. Now, I know this isn't one of the best Alabama defenses they've ever had, but it's still, I mean, Alabama, come on. It was impressive to be with all the things that you put together, Ty, with the fact that he's a freshman, with the fact that it's the biggest stage in that sport, and, you know, he's facing Alabama, that defense, and that coach over there who's already got a million national championships. It was one of the most amazing things that I've seen. And it's for everybody that always thinks about things being predictable, it's just another the long line of examples of when they put two teams on a field together and they play, you just don't know what's going to happen sometimes.
So I heard you reference this in your podcast when I was listening to it yesterday. There's going to be some Alabama fans, some people out in college football media that say, hey, maybe the Nick Saban dynasty is cracking a little bit. Now, for all we know, he could come back as angry as ever and yield his team to a national championship next year. But based on the coaching turnover, based on what you saw on Monday night, do you even think there's the slightest chance that this could be the downhill trot for Nick Saban going downhill?
I don't think so. I think he's got one or two more of these just, you know, tremendous bursts with him. I think that he's already just torqued off as can be, and he's not going to let that happen again next year, which is bad news for everybody that plays Alabama next season, because I think they're going to have another outstanding year. But I just don't see this being the beginning of the slide. I still think that, you know, this is what Alabama does sometimes, is they'll have a really remarkable year, and then there's the year that isn't as good by their standards, even though they won 14 games this year. But I think that they'll be in the playoff again probably next year and the year after. I mean, who knows? But I don't see it as the beginning of the end, not yet.
Ruskin, he said, I love the media. I love what you guys do. Were you just as perplexed and surprised by that than everyone else in college football?
Maybe it was jet lag going out to California. I don't know, because there's that, and then there's this, the worst fake field goal I have ever seen executed or attempted to be executed. You're going to have the kicker be the lead blocker for someone? Really? Against a 300-pound lineman? I mean, come on. Who radioed down and said, hey, let's put this, we got this. The look is there. The look is there. And then you can see Saban look at one of the coaches afterward and is like, really? That's what you had the look? Okay. I don't know.
It reminded me a little bit of Justin Fields and the fake punt against for Georgia in the championship. And he'd even tell when he's out there, he's thinking to himself, we might have even looked over to the sideline. Are we really going to do this? It's the same idea as Mike Tomlin calling a fake punt near midfield, you know, on fourth and six, and going to a fullback when you've got a Hall of Fame quarterback and an All-Pro wide receiver. And sometimes coaches just think they're smarter than everybody else, don't they?
Yeah, and you've got, with all due respect, you've got not the most athletic guy on the team as your kicker or punter. And when it's fourth and six, remember, because of, you know, the distance for the hold or the punt or whatever, it's really about fourth and 16. So you're going to – it only works like that if the punter throws a pass and gets lucky. The punter running 16 yards to get a first down or the kicker is probably not going to happen very often.
Derek, you realize that you're still in the heads of everybody that's in this station. I mean, there's a stapler that I'm looking at with your name on it. I've seen a headset with your name on it here. I think there was a telephone that had your name on it. It's been a year, man, but you're still, Tommy had to bring you back because it's almost, as I come into this studio sometimes, it's like you never left.
Well, back in the day, you had to do that or people would steal your stuff. I never had my stapler stolen one time because it had my name on it three times or my headphones or anything. So those were necessary precautions because you never know when some of the salespeople are going to wander over there and just borrow your stapler and never give it back.
Anybody steal your stuff yet, Ty, or just, you know, steal your youthful enthusiasm?
I've lucked out, but Nick was advocating the other day that you should steal the company's toilet paper, so I don't... Who knows, man? I don't know.
That's just called smart traveling. You take it from someone that's been in hotels as much as I have. They don't care if you take a roll of toilet paper, a box of tissues, all the soap and shampoo you can get your hands on.
What is it? What is it? Kramer said it's a write-off for them. They don't care. Come on.
That's exactly right.
All right, let's talk about tonight's game, Derek. Florida, Arkansas. Florida's really pounded the Razorbacks the last couple times they met. Kayvon Allen is the guy that a lot of Razorback fans wish would have gone to Arkansas. Do you think he would have been a game changer if he would have been a Razorback?
That's a great question. I've never thought about that, but he probably would have maybe the program in a little bit. Not that the program is in a bad spot or anything. I think they've got a solid program, but would they be a notch or two higher? That's definitely probably possible. I mean, you remember Kayvon Allen was in the Elite Eight a couple years ago when South Carolina beat him to go to the Final Four. So, yeah, that's definitely Kayvon Allen. When you say Kayvon Allen, I instantly think Kayvon Allen in his 12th year at Florida, because he's been one of those guys that it seems like this is his 30th game against Arkansas tonight. I know it's not, but it feels that way. And it feels extra that way because he's from here and he went there, and, you know, you got to face him all the time. Yeah, would they be a... They might be a couple notches higher in the national pecking order if he'd come here. I think so, yeah.
I think he'd probably be in a more comfortable place right now for himself, because he doesn't look like he's too comfy, way under his scoring average in Arkansas right now. It's why the stats are so misleading when you look at the full season stats. It says 81 points a game for Arkansas. Derek, this is not a team that's going to score 80 points a game. It just isn't.
Right.
I think if they get to 72, 73, they're in a good position. I think that gets them a win tonight.
Yeah, and Florida's not a great – I mean, looking at the season stats again, like you just said, but if you look at those, Florida's not a prolific offensive team this year either. So this could be – if you're one of those – I love the foul counters on Twitter during Razorback games, the people that always point out – and, you know, sometimes – in basketball games, just guys foul a lot. It happens. It's not always the fact that the officiating is terrible. Sometimes it is, but most of the time it could be just there's a lot of fouls. This could be a grinded out foul-a-palooza tonight, unfortunately, at Bud Walton Arena. But it definitely doesn't have the feel of a 90-87 kind of Florida Arkansas shootout that you may have seen in the years past. Both teams are having a difficult time scoring.
So let's look at the Texas A&M game we saw on Saturday. Arkansas comes out with a 2-point win. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I thought Texas A&M looked awful in that game, Derek. And all these people are coming out on Twitter. It's like, look how good Arkansas looked on the road in the SEC. And I'm sitting there to myself, Admon Gilder's out for the year. They lost Robert Williams, and I'm blanking on the other big men they lost from last year's squad. DJ Hogue. This team's just not that good under Billy Kinney this year. And so all these people are coming out, oh, this team, they won on the road, blah, blah, blah. Should people be reeling it back in a little bit, even though Arkansas was able to get a road win to start out SEC play?
Yeah, this is a real tough one for me, because there's one of two ways, obviously, to look at it. The way you're saying, they barely beat a team that they were in control of in the final minute 15, and they let them get right back in it and almost win the thing at the end. So there's some reason to be concerned about that, but there's also... And I hate that it's a cliche, but it's true. There's also some value in when you win on the road in this conference. And Arkansas hadn't had a lot of success in Reed Arena. I don't know if they've won there yet since A&M joined the league. If they have, it's not that many times. So there is some value in it, but does it mean they're going to go, 14-2 in the league? Probably not, though.
Winning on the road is so difficult. Just look at Mississippi State at South Carolina. Hey, A&M, by the way, yesterday had Kentucky down 15-2. In the first half. Of course, Kentucky comes back and ends up with a win anyway. Hey, Derek, we have a segment every Wednesday that we're going to do in the second hour, but I want to do one with you here and see if you can change my mind. Mike Anderson is a top 50 coach in the country.
Okay.
Change my mind.
He's not a top 50?
I'm saying that he is a top 50 coach. I'm asking you to change my mind.
Okay. Well, let me preface this by saying that I believe he's a top 50 coach, but just to have the argument that he isn't, he had that really one, it seems like that one outstanding run at Missouri, and then they never get to the second weekend at Arkansas. He's been there all these years. They're always, you know, kind of up and down throughout the season. So, I mean, it's really hard for me to make an argument that, and that's one of the things, is that everything I say, I usually, you know, believe in. So this is kind of hard for me to make a case against Mike Anderson being a top 50 coach, because I think he is.
It's tough to join the debate team in this case, because I'm just like you. Yeah. I mean, I see a guy that's been to the tournament about two-thirds of the season. He's been a coach at three places. I think there's value to never having a losing season, because it's happened at three different schools. And I think that a lot of the detractors come from the idea of maybe, look, this is a program that should be in the Sweet 16 more than it has been in the last 24 years, which is to say it hasn't happened. But
right.
To base it off of a lack of postseason success is short-sighted.
Yeah. Well, I think so, but I think that's a lot of what. Yeah, and I don't play a very good Skip Bayless where I could just pick a side and go all in. I can't do that. But
hey, I was at a sports lecture, and he told me he's never lost an argument, Derek.
I believe
probably believes it too.
I believe he believes that too. Yeah, I mean, but that's sports now. Everybody's looking at postseason success, and fans just don't have time or interest or both in hearing the big picture about people. They want to know about the postseason. In the pros, we measure rings. In college football, we're measuring all the championships at Alabama. And now Dabo must be a better coach because he's got two championships. So that's just the nature of it right now.
All right, Derek, 30 seconds on this before we let you go. Jalen Hurts is reportedly on the transfer portal. Where does your gut feeling say he ends up?
USC, I don't know. Oregon, maybe. I mean, he's not coming here. What, if you've got, like,
man, you're an Arkansas many, fans feeling, man.
Well, I mean, if does he have, how many years does he have to play? One. Next year?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you come here and go 5-7 when you could go somewhere and maybe win 9 games? I mean, that's why Kelly Bryant wasn't going to come here, because he's got one shot. Missouri could win the East next year. I'm not saying they will, but it's possible. So, I don't know. Jalen Hurts. And they won't let him transfer to an SEC West school, will they? I don't think so.
I got one word for you before we let you go, Derek. Oklahoma.
Oh, that's right.
That's what I think is going to happen. Derek will be listening, and I will have the podcast out tomorrow morning. Ruskin is Ranting, Episode 2. Download it on your Apple Podcast, or you can find it at hitthatline.com. Derek, great stuff. We'll talk with you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Clutch blood running through Darryl Macon's veins. The Razorbacks win it 71-70.
Whatever you think I would do, do the opposite. And you're going to make a lot more money in your life. A lot more. I don't know if you'll be happy. I don't know if you'll feel fulfilled.
But money always equated to happiness.
But you'll have a lot more money. It does. It does. Change my mind.
I changed my mind.
Hi, Joey.
Hey, how you doing?
He won't sell anybody out to buy his future.
How can you be so obtuse?
What did you call me?
Obtuse. Is it deliberate?
Son, you're forgetting yourself.
Change my mind.
You get to go first, Ty.
Woo! All right, I'll start with mine. So for whatever reason, including guys this morning, John Neighbors and Tommy Kraft, they don't think Clemson belongs in the best team ever conversation.
First of all, there's no P in Clemson. Everybody drops a P.
Did I say P? Clemson. Clemson.
I think you might have actually added an I instead of the E in Clemson.
Clemson.
We can't help it sometimes. It's okay. I don't mean to go all, you know, say my school correctly mode.
My bad.
You want to call him Clemson or Clemson, it's all up to you.
Yeah, so here's what Dabo had to say on Clemson. Clemson.
It's in your head now.
Yeah, it being one of the best teams of all time.
You know, that was something we talked about coming into this season. You know, I mean, why not? That was something that day one, we always have our team goals. And then every team each year, there's kind of some challenges within the team that I present to them. One of the things we talked about was best ever, because that's something that the seniors talked about. How many wins do we need to be the winningest class? Well, you need 50. Well, they got 55. You've got to do things that have never been done before. And this team has done that all year.
Tim, I don't know why I just called you Tim. Phil, this should be considered.
I don't even look like a Tim.
I know. Phil, this team should be considered as one of the best college football teams of all time for a couple reasons. One, number one scoring defense in all of college football, only allowing 13 points per game. Number two, fourth in scoring offense, 44 points per game. That's starting Trevor Lawrence not at the beginning of the season, a couple games into the season. So you're having to switch the quarterback, kind of translate, kind of shift up the offense around his strengths, which he has a lot of them. They whooped the best coach in college football 44-16, which has never been done before. There's all these different pundits coming around. It's like, man, I've never seen Nick Saban in Alabama get beaten down like this. They dominated that game, not only just not in a regular season, not in the college football playoff, in the national championship game. They absolutely mutilated Alabama, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Number three, go back to the 1894 Penn team, the 1897 team. Those are the only two teams that have gone 15-0 ever. Since, I mean, yes, you had in a game with the college football playoff, and that adds to it, so you haven't had as many to have opportunities. But when you look at this team is really doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. Travis Etienne's a solid running back. You saw what Justin Ross could do, and he's a freshman. T. Higgins, they got studs on the defensive line. Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence, who wasn't able to play in that national title in the college football playoff. Austin Bryant, Cleveland Farrell. They have studs all over the field. So they only have two close games all year long. At A&M, 28-26, when Kelly Bryant's still a quarterback. And against Syracuse, when Trevor Lawrence gets knocked down in the second quarter. So I think you at least, I'm going to go ahead and come out and say I don't think they're the best team of all time. I think that probably belongs to Miami in 01 or USC in 04. You could say maybe Texas 05. Florida State had a pretty good squad in 2013. Nebraska, you had a Notre Dame squad that went undefeated. But they at least need to be in the conversation. And I think some people, kind of like Tommy, kind of like John, are kind of looking over their accomplishments this season. They belong in the conversation. Changed my mind.
I think what people are more looking at is the perception of the league that Clemson comes from.
And that's fair.
And the schedule that they played against more than anything. And the ACC this past year, nobody would confuse it with a strong conference at all.
But that's not their fault. Like, Florida State has traditionally been a strong college football team, one of the best, one of the blue bloods in college football. Willie Taggart had an abysmal first season. Syracuse is on the rise, but Louisville was down in the dumps. Petrino gets fired. I mean, they can't help their own schedule. When they go out and schedule home and home with Texas A&M, they're doing everything they can to make sure their schedule is tough. And that Texas A&M game was tough, but they can't help if their conference is down. That's my argument with UCF. And when they did play competition, they smashed Notre Dame 30-3, and they demolished Alabama 44-16. So I think that argument only holds weight when you play good teams and they're really tight games. They murdered the two teams that were the best on their schedule outside of Texas A&M.
I would put them in the conversation because of what they did in the national championship game and also in the college football playoff mm-hmm. game against Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl, because Notre Dame is good. I think if you were to look at what happened in the championship game, it looked to me that you can't base the idea that Notre Dame doesn't belong in the playoff because of what happened against Clemson.
I think that was more about Clemson than Notre Dame.
Much more about Clemson. So here are the teams that you might say would be in that conversation too. And some of it has to do with years of perspective afterwards. Now we can look at the 2001 Miami team with all those great players.
Andre Johnson, Vilma. I mean, that team was so loaded with eventually Pro Football Hall of Famers. It's unbelievable.
And 1995 Nebraska was outscoring teams by an average of 53-15. That's better than the scoring margin that Clemson had. Admittedly, Clemson beat teams pretty badly. The average score was Clemson 44, opponents 13. But Clemson, if you're just talking about dominance, and again, I think you take the four-point win against Syracuse and toss it out because Lawrence had a concussion.
Second quarter.
Wasn't even available to play. Other than that, the next closest game is at Texas A&M, and that's the first game of the season. On the road, too, which is still, you win at Kyle Field, that's an impressive performance.
Two-point win,
That's just I can't change your mind with that.
Thank you, Phil.
As of right now, I would tend to agree with you, and it's for me more based upon what we saw on Monday. Utter dominance of a team that had looked completely dominant throughout the entire season. All right, my first goes to something that happened when I first came into the studio today. Ty and I get along pretty well. We do get along well, but we might have to rethink things a little bit after the way we... It's not an introduction when you first see a buddy or a friend or a family member. But what's it called when you first walk into a room and someone's there and you see them for the first time? A greeting. Is it a greeting?
Meet up, greeting.
Right.
What's up?
And there's a lot of ways to do it. Now, sometimes you go in for the handshake. Some people just automatically go for the handshake. Then they think that it could lead to a dap of some sort or just a handshake. Some people have stronger handshakes than others and really base their self-worth upon how hard they can squeeze somebody's hand. Others might be germophobes. Others might, you know, not want to actually squeeze what's in someone else's hand. By the way, the handshake was invented to make it before hand washing, I think, was a real popular thing. And so people would say, hey, here's what I got on my hand. What do you got on yours? Let's do it together. If we're going to go in that route these days, we might as well, I don't know, lick each other's feet or kiss each other for an introduction. That's not how we do it. Some people, they'll go in with the handshake. Others come with a fist pound. The only thing that's more awkward when two bros, and I guess in this case, Ty, you and I are bros. I've never viewed myself as such. You've got more of the hairdo to I think, be lumped into the bro group and the age, too. The only thing that's more awkward when one bro goes in for the handshake and the other goes for the fist pound, which, by the way, has been coined the shake pound. You can find it now in Urban Dictionary. Thank you very much. The only thing more awkward is the shake hug. That's when you really need to reevaluate your friendship.
I think that typically... Yeah, and that's more guys. I don't really go in for handshakes with girls if I think I know a girl. Actually, I kind of let her. If she wants to hug me, that's fine. I'm just kind of...
Well, you got to go by... In this case, you've got to go by the cues from the female, yeah. I think. And it's okay to go in from the hug. Chances are, if it's somebody you just met once or twice, you can. It's an ass-out hug. You know what I'm talking about, the ass-out hug. When the butt goes out, you just get a hug around the shoulders a little bit, and it just feels very awkward. It might be one arm... It might be two arms without any real feeling. But my change my mind is, if you go for a hug and your bro goes for the handshake, it's time to reevaluate the friendship.
Well,
change
here's my thing. When I approach someone or see someone that's over 30, the Generation X, Generation Z, or whatever, I try to acclimate to their form of communication. And so I see you, even though we are bros, I will give you that. I went in for the handshake, and you probably trying to acclimate to me by going in for a fist bump. Mm-hmm. We're trying to acclimate to each other. You to a millennial, me to a Generation X/Z, or whichever one you are. And so it's not like we're not bros. We're just trying to feel each other out and do our thing. Like, that's, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not saying we should evaluate our relationship until one of us does the hug and the other, which is now called the shake hug. We better not have a shake hug. We've got to be on the same level to continue this show.
Also, we need to... like the dap, if like someone's going for high five or another handshake. It's just, I don't know. It happened. But I agree with you. Like, some people going for handshake, you're going for hug or vice versa. It's just like, oh, that's awkward.
Yeah, you don't want to be left with your arms out and someone's coming right in and pokes you in the chest.
So I think this was at the Texas A&M game. My sister's introducing me to people, and they, like, my sister's friends, like, come up and hug me because they're like, she tells me about it. And I like, gave some of them handshakes because I just felt like weird. Like, I don't know you. Like, especially as like a female, I just feel like we were doing that. And my sister, like, after, she's like, why were you giving people handshakes? I was like, I'm sorry. That was bad.
Because I don't want to feel like your friends think I'm creeping
on
them.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what you were probably doing anyway.
Sister has key friends. That's another conversation for another day. All right, so Cliff Kingsbury has taken over the Arizona. You see how quick I changed the subject on that? Cliff Kingsbury is the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Here
was one of his introductory lines, getting fans excited about the new experience with the Arizona Cardinals.
Cliff Kingsbury here. Cardinals fans, can't tell you how excited I am to be your head coach. looking forward to taking the field at State Farm Stadium in front of the Red Sea. It's time to rise up.
The Red Sea? Is that what they call Arizona Cardinals fans? I thought whatever the color of the seats are is the sea.
Dude went 35-40 at Texas Tech. He never won more than 8 games. Yes, he had good quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes. He's the OC with Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M for 1 year. So he's got a good pedigree when it comes to quarterbacks. The only thing he's excited about is being 20 miles away from Arizona State, which is in Tempe, which is about 20 miles away from Phoenix.
That whole area as a whole, there's plenty of bronze skin for him to, you know, ogle.
He's just trying to get out of Lubbock, man. He doesn't care about coaching the Cardinals.
Well, he'd already gotten out of Lubbock. He went to Los Angeles for what, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, and then starts interviewing for head coaching jobs, winds up in Arizona. He doesn't care about the Cardinals. He cares about 20 miles away from some of the hottest co-eds in the entire United States at Arizona State. Changed my mind.
Well, this is about scheme more than anything else. And I don't mean scheming to get chicks, which I think is exactly the scheme you were talking about with Cliff Kingsbury. It's about the air raid offense. It's about translating that into professional football.
Trying to pluck out another Sean McVay. That's what Arizona's trying to do.
It's about building a quarterback in Josh Rosen who played for a pretty awful team last year. And if you got a kid with a big arm like Rosen, Larry Fitz still looks like he can play, and a team that finished dead last in offense, you don't even have to let him worry about defense. Hire yourself a defense. I don't know who the DC is for Arizona. We'll probably find a new one. My guess is that Kingsbury won't have much say over the roster, certainly not on the defensive side. He might have some say into some positions on the offense, but this is about scheme first and foremost.
And he's got Josh Rosen, the former UCLA standout, who's a pretty good college quarterback. His NFL future and his NFL talents yet to be determined, but it's going to be interesting to see if this pans out, because you wonder if this works. You wonder how many more NFL executives, NFL franchises are going to try and go the college route to see if they can pluck a young buck and see if it works at the professional level.
I mean, I really can't remember the last coach that went from college to the pros and had a lot of success, but I mean, people point to Pete Carroll. Carroll came from a national championship program. I don't know, they had that title taken away from him for some reasons that might be the reason that Carroll left USC anyway. He had success at Seattle, didn't have success with the Patriots or the Jets before that, and he'd been a college coach, I think, before that, so it's a different story, much different thing. But also the thing with Pete Carroll is he was great. He was a great offensive mind when he came out of college to Seattle. It's the same thing with Cliff Kingsbury. I know there's been a lot of jokes about failing upward, but when you go from college to the pros, it's such a different thing.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.